Hey there, Chamber World. Jay Revel here. Welcome to another edition of the Greater Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce podcast. We are delighted to bring you another episode with another fabulous guest. Today, it is our pleasure to have Ime Hutt here with us today. If you do not know Ime, hopefully you do. She is the president of a wonderful company here in Tallahassee called Golden Lighting. We'll let Ime tell you a little bit more about all the amazing products that they bring to market. But she's very involved in the community. She is the chair of the board at Domi Station, one of our great entrepreneurial assets here in Tallahassee. We'll talk about that briefly. But without further ado, Ime, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being with us. It is a real treat. I know we've got a long list of things we want to jump into today. But welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for the invite.
Ime, tell us a little bit, you know, again, for those who maybe do not know you, what is the Ime Hutt story? The abridged version, right?
I was born and raised in Tallahassee and went through the Leon County school systems, went over to UC Berkeley for college, and came back home to help my father in his business, Golden Lighting. And I've been back for 16 years now.
Yeah, that's great.
So our company, we design chandeliers, and we manufacture them in China, import them here into Tallahassee, wholesale them to a network of over 1,400 brick-and-mortar retailers, and have a pretty huge online presence as well.
Very cool. Very cool. And family here in town, tell us what you... If you don't know, so you might have noticed, picked up on this, our weekly column that we do called 300 East Park Avenue. A couple of weeks ago, I actually wrote about your husband, who is just a real tour de force here in the community. Lester Hutt, folks, is just engaged in some really great things when it comes to particularly how we retain talent in Tallahassee. I always love talking to Lester. So tell us a little bit about your family. I think people always enjoy hearing that about folks.
Well, the reason why we came back to Tallahassee was not only because we could become entrepreneurs through the family business, but because we wanted to be closer to family and start a family here. And it's funny that you talk about Lester, because we are a team in kind of executing this vision for the future for the community. We're all the work that we do for the community is for our kids, because we want our kids to settle in Tallahassee and have all the opportunities for them here. So we have about 20 years to build that a future for them, where they could get any job they want. Just if they want to open up a business, they have a vibrant community to do so, and have the social life that they want, a place, anything that they could want in a life, that Tallahassee is a great choice. So and it's selfishly not just for them, so eventually their grandkids will be here, so that I can be close to them.
I always love hearing stories of sort of couples and families that really dive into how to make Tallahassee a better community at the dinner table, you know, so to speak. I think that we need more people, more families who think like that, think like you all do. And I'm you know, we're proud to know you. We're proud to have y'all all as members of the chamber and engaged in what we're doing. And we're fortunate to be able to work with you all. And anything out there that you wish others were thinking about, per se, maybe as it relates to our community? Or maybe the question is, how do we get more people to think like that about Tallahassee?
So I got the bug about 5 years ago when Steve Evans recommended I go to a conference in San Francisco at Singularity University. I guess they were originally like a think tank where all you have these tech titans get together and talk about the future. And I came back incredibly inspired, and have since gone to two more conferences. And what I've learned there was to think positively about the future. And we're given tools, including the exponential mindset, on how to think strategically. And I want to share those ideas with our community, because I think that can help us get not only a competitive edge, but maybe inspire us to become disruptors ourselves.
So we are kind of on the heels of our annual community conference, the 2019 Chamber Conference. I'm sure you guys have heard a lot about it already. We've had several podcast episodes on the topic. Ime was actually one of our speakers there, and you hosted a talk called The Seven Tenets of an Exponential Mindset. We've gotten some great feedback, and I think our listeners would be interested to hear a little bit more about that. Would you be willing to share some insight on what you exactly mean by an exponential mindset?
First off, we kind of have to understand that it's not just what happens in our community. We're now beginning to see the effects of other communities on us, particularly like tech companies out of Silicon Valley or wherever. We're getting increasingly global, and disruption is coming from all sorts of places, even unexpected places. You have these unicorns coming out. They're just really high growth company that seems to come out of nowhere. And we're in this age where, like, even New York Times, like, how did they ever think that they would be competing with Facebook for where people got their news? Or Honeywell, did they ever think that they would be competing with Google on smart thermostats? I mean, this is the type of environment we're in. And so we have to understand, like, what are these companies that are being formed that are so disruptive? And not just what are they doing, but how are they thinking? And how are they so successful in growing so quickly and disrupting industries and communities? And I think foundationally, you need to understand the difference between linear and exponential. Kind of dust off your math, high school math. So if you can imagine linear, so it's a straight line, and you take 30 steps on a linear path, you go from point A to B, and each step is 1 meter. So if you take 30 steps on that path, you go 30 meters. But if you take 30 steps on an exponential path, and let's just say exponential is doubling with each step, if you take 30 steps on an exponential curve, you would have gone over a billion meters, so over 26 times around the Earth. So the scales are very different, and the speed at which they occur are very different, which is why you see these unicorns, things come out of nowhere. It's because they're taking advantage of this exponential growth. What I learned, like when I first went to the conference, I was kind of in awe and overwhelmed by all these technologies. And it's easy to feel like, oh, that's really far off away or not really relevant to me. That's all tech stuff. And, what does that have to do with me? And in a way, I felt a little jealous, too, because I was thinking, man, these people are going to steal my kids from me because they're not like all the jobs are going to go to Silicon Valley or wherever. That's not fair. And but then the second time around, I learned about different types of mindsets, and particularly exponential mindset. And if you know that something has to change, if you have to change what you want to do, you first have to change how you think. And so exponential mindset is how do these exponential companies do what they do? How are they thinking about their business? Incremental thinking versus exponential thinking. Incremental is trying to make something better, so 10% better. Whereas exponential is trying to make something 10 times better. The scale between the two, 10% and 10 times, is 100 times. Mm-hmm. Making something better, and then to make something exponential 10 times better, you have to make it different. You can't just simply do the same thing.
You can't
just
improve on whatever is currently there.
And, like, the first thing, like, you have to set your goal, like, moonshot, like, big dream, go for the fences. And one example, like, I've had a lot of success in my company in the past 16 years. I've already helped this company grow 10 times from when we started. And for the first time, I was thinking, hey, what if we go 10 times again? And like usually in our budgeting cycle, it's real easy, like 10% more, you know, I just dump the numbers in and within an hour, I have my plan for the next year. But if you look at that number and you say, if I try to make it 10 times more, everything changes. Like my processes break down. Like I have to look at my team. Like, do I have the right resources in place? My infrastructure, like my facility can't, my warehouse facility can't take that much volume. There's so many things that have to change. And even looking at my customers, do I have enough customers to support 10 times growth? Am I looking at the right market? So when you think big like that, it completely redefines your space. And it's just, you can't just make it a little bit better. If I were trying to go at an incremental linear pace at 10%, it would take 10 lifetimes, right? So probably 150 years for me to be able to go 10x again. So of course, I want to do that in like 10. So what do I do?
Got to make some changes.
Yeah. And, you know, my team, we were talking about those ideas and kind of rethinking our market. And it's really exciting time to be at Golden Lighting. The second thing that I talk about in exponential mindset is where you want to follow a vision versus following a plan. So it's driven by a massively transformative purpose, where massive is something that's audaciously big and aspirational. Transformative is that at minimum you want to change an industry, a community, or the world, world domination.
Yeah.
And it has to have a purpose, something that unifies and inspires action from not just people within your company or your organization, but can inspire stakeholders outside, whether it's your audience, your customers, your vendors, suppliers, whoever. You can write that purpose on a t-shirt and other people would feel compelled to want to wear that t-shirt with your purpose. And one really good example of this is Tesla. So with Elon Musk, their MTP is to accelerate the world's transition to sustainable energy. And here's this guy, Elon. He wants to put the world onto, you know, sustainable energy, right? And his way to do that is through electric cars. And so he formed a company, Tesla, and he published in 2007 the Secret Master Plan. He said, I'm going to build this super sports car, and I'm going to build, like, I don't know, hundreds or thousands of those, and I'm going to take that money, and I'm going to build a more affordable car. I'm going to make thousands of those, tens of thousands of those. And then I'm going to take that money and make an even more affordable car and sell millions of those. And then at that point, he's at that scale where he's starting to have an impact. But what's the funny thing about Elon's vision was, it doesn't matter what you feel about Elon or Tesla, because he's been successful in fulfilling his purpose. Because now every single auto manufacturer has an electric vehicle in their product plan.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with his influence. And what's even crazier is that his plan doesn't end with cars, right? So he's looking at solar and all sorts of other things.
Yeah, he's a revolutionary.
Right. Yeah. And so, and, you know, I'm sure with his company, he's had to pivot from his plan, but his vision is about, you know, towards bringing this industry towards sustainable energy. Mm-hmm. And that's the point, is that purpose. It's not easy to come up with something like that. It's easy to do something within your organization, but it's much harder when you think about it on an industry level.
Yeah.
Or maybe larger community.
Sure.
So how do takes you, a, yeah, go ahead.
It takes a lot of risk too, I would imagine, because when he first saw that idea, he probably, you know, thought, well, this could sink or swim, you know, and it's worth a lot of money. So in everyday businesses, they may not be as confident to take everyday risks like that are so massive.
Well, there's another example of that that we're using at Domi. So like one way is you could think about Domi Station's mission, which we're a local community incubator that serves anybody in the community with the idea to make it into a business plan. And we could just focus on fine-tuning that to just pump out as many people as possible to have a successful business through our programs. But I think we could have a much larger purpose to serve our community. Is like, what is our role in the community? Can we coordinate with multiple players in the ecosystem? Like, how do, well, really, you know, as a community, our purpose should be, you know, how can we mobilize our whole community for growth of business, whether you're a startup or existing, like how can Domi help with that? So instead of just focusing on our piece. So, I mean, I think that there are different ways to have a higher purpose while still fulfilling your mission.
Sure.
And it doesn't even just have to be in your business. It can be through nonprofits or
anything you're involved with.
Right. That's kind of why we're engaging with the chamber, right?
That's right. So. Absolutely. No doubt about it. We're all about some exponential mindsets.
Well, see, that'll get to our network effects. But the third thing that we talk about is you've got to maximize learning versus minimizing risk. And there's a couple of things about this, and a lot of it is about mindset and your thinking. And we always say, oh, let's change, or people resist change, or adapting is really hard. And many times as leaders, we get frustrated about people who don't want to change. And one analogy that is used is that change is like a trapeze bar. So many times we complain about people not changing, but imagine if they're hanging from a trapeze bar and it's dark and there's no net below. Well, they're going to hang on to that trapeze bar as long as possible, no matter how many people are going to be yelling at them from down below. They're going to be, you know, let go, you know, you need to adapt, you need to change. They're like, heck no, I'm going to hang on to this bar as long as possible because I'm going to die if I don't if I don't hang on. So too often we complain or about people who don't do that. But only until you bring a new trapeze bar over to them will they let go of the old one. And so that's very much like change. If you can bring change to them that they can see and understand, that they could begin to adapt. And so, and part of that is people's ability to unlearn. And we're now in an environment that your past success will not necessarily define your future success. So all those things that you did that had worked might suddenly become invalidated by new technologies or new business that comes into town. So what do you do? How do you unlearn? It's very, very difficult to let go of things that worked. And I think the first step is to recognize that an old model is no longer relevant or effective. First, like, is this working, or do you see that change is happening and that you might be at risk? And then second, can you find a new mental model that achieves that goal, and how should we be thinking about this? And I talk about mental models. Well, first off, mental models are how we make sense of the world and how we see cause and effect and how we get where we are going. The way we stay relevant is to keep our mental models up to date. And one really good example of mental models versus business models is when Southwest Airlines came into the market many decades ago, and they disrupted the airline industry. They came in as a discount, low-cost air carrier, right? And before that, before they came to the scene, the experience on an airplane was very different. If you remember, they actually had real napkins and real silverware, right? It was like a high-class experience, right, on the airlines. Well, here Southwest comes in, we're going to go low cost, and really disrupted the industry. And airlines tried to copy their business model, tried to copy Southwest business model, but failed because they didn't copy their mental model. And the way Southwest viewed themselves is that they were a company that serves people using airplanes. Whereas other air carriers, they fly airplanes that carry people. So it was very asset-based, not people-driven. And so they weren't executing in that way, and they failed. And the only airline carrier that did a really good job of replicating Southwest's mental model is JetBlue.
Yeah.
Right? So that experience and customer centricity. Mm-hmm. So, like, we see a lot of things that are changing, like, particularly in education. Like, at Domi, we were looking at the classroom model for teaching our incubation programs, and we're realizing, you know what? This isn't working because we can only serve 12 people at a time, and people learn at different speeds, and they have different questions and different needs, and trying to put them all in the classroom together is really difficult and not as effective. So we try to break it into a continuous cycle so people can come in at any time, at any level, and get their information through kind of modular approach. So, like, we recognize, hey, this isn't working, so what's a way for us to change our approach and how we deliver our curriculum? And so, you know, we're trying new things and trying to think, okay, if we were an entrepreneur and we came in not with a beginner's mindset, but we actually already had some experience, what do I need? And trying to, like, create a program that would be more customizable experience.
How do you apply that to gold mining?
Well, that's an interesting segue. actually, it's...
I have a real knack for that.
It's actually one of my favorite tenets of the exponential mindset is personalization versus standardization. So a lot of companies, like particularly product companies like mine, their view to success is to create a lot of scalable efficiency. So, like, for me, a traditional manufacturer, to make a lot of money, it's cheaper and more profitable for me to make one thing and a lot of it, and then I can deliver it as cheaply as possible, as quickly and efficiently as possible. So scalable efficiency. But let's flip that around. So what if I want to do ultimate personalization and I need to make one unique item per customer? That's really inefficient and really difficult to do. So the trick to the future thinking is, how can you get to scalable personalization at the same cost or speed as standardization? That's really, really difficult to do. And many times you see this, like, some of the easiest examples are in the food industry. Say, take Chipotle. Like, you can go and customize your burrito, and you zip through that line really quick. But you see, hey, I've got, you know, I don't know, 50 toppings I can choose from to build my burrito, and the ingredients are fresh, and you have a fully customized burrito at the end of it, and it only took you, like, a minute to go through the line, and the price wasn't that high, right? So that would be an example of scalable personalization, and you see that a lot in different restaurants. But at my company, at Golden Lighting, we tapped into it through a new product line of mix and match products, where typically when we launch a new chandelier collection, we may have anywhere from 5 or 10 products in a collection. And on our larger collections, maybe we'll have 20. We found a way to develop product collections that have maybe 300 or 400 different options. And we're able to deliver that at the same speed and cost of just standard product. And we started this concept a few years ago, and now it's taken up about half of my business. It's just been growing at a really, I guess, exponential rate.
Yeah.
It's been very, very successful. And this can be applied at many different types of businesses, whether it's through customized services, customized products. If you can think of a way to, again, create that inviting your customers or your clients to develop the product with you, you're going to have basically a captive audience. The tenet that I get the most questions about, most excitement about, is empowering decision making versus centralized decision making. So in a traditional business environment, it's very common to have hierarchies. Mm-hmm. So it's for decision making. So if you want to get something done, you got to run up the chain to get approvals, and then it has to go back down the chain to get something done for execution. And
lots of trouble if you jump out.
You can get in trouble for jumping out, but then also can be slow to adapt and slow to react.
Sure.
And we're in this environment where things are changing very quickly, and not just that, but maybe you have multiple things that have to change at the same time. So how do you engage when you're flanked from all sides? So one example I like to use is the military and the fog of war. So in the military, you can't have a standard operating procedure for everything. So like, you can have the best plan, but battle strategies, whatever. But the minute you engage the enemy, that all goes out the window. Mm-hmm. So like, you can't stop and ask, you know, your commander, how do I fight this enemy? You know, they're What's using the a weapon I've never seen before, or they're using a move I never trained before. So you have to train them with some guidelines on how to engage the enemy. So what is needed in the business world is a doctrine. So it's not enough to have a vision, mission, and values. There needs to be a new tool of decision doctrine. It's not a standard operating procedure. It's not an operating manual where you outline the process step by step, because every day you're going to have exceptions. Every day you're going to have opportunities to succeed or fail, and you need your people to be able to think on their feet and be able to engage. And so how can you cultivate that type of thinking? And it's to teach decision doctrine within your organization. And many times I've applied this in my company where I'm trying to teach them how to think. So it's not enough to say, hey, let's go out and do this, but how should we be thinking about this? How should you be thinking about this? Let me tell you why I want to do this, and like my reasoning behind it, and then you make the best decision based on the guidelines. Maybe something changes out in the field when you talk to a customer. Adapt, knowing that this is our purpose for this action. So,
do you have decision doctrine within Golden Lining?
We do, and actually, exponential mindset is one of them.
Wow!
So I've taught it through to my entire management team. At multiple levels. I've even opened up that to my frontline team. Hmm. But what it is trying to empower the individual within the organization to make the best decision for our organization. Because I can't be out there on the phones with all of my customers all the time. I can't deal with every single vendor, every single transaction. There are my best line of defense or offense to seize those opportunities and tackle those problems. There's so many things that you have to do to set up that culture, but it was predicated like this organizationally to kind of get your team on to this way of thinking. You have to break the silos of decision-making, breaking the monopolies of data, breaking the monopolies of who gets to come up with ideas. Everyone should be allowed to do that. And I kind of have a little personal story with this, but I found myself in a situation, a serious health situation last year, and I realized, hey, what happens to my company if I'm no longer president? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the succession planning?
Yeah.
Do people know how to think like I think? Or what are the strategies? How do they execute on that? And I realized that I needed to be more open with sharing with my team how I thought and why I thought the things I thought, and then let them see what I see. So we created company-wide dashboards for our operations. I let them see all of our information from financial data, sales data, operational metrics, accuracy, all those things, because how can they, I expect them to make the best decision if they don't have the best information.
Sure.
So we created these company-wide dashboards. I trained my management team to look at them, and then not just look at them, well, what do you do with this information? What kind of decisions can come out of this information? And then we ended up meeting every day. We had a stand-up meeting, managers meeting, and we got the hang of it after a couple months. And then it's like, you know what? I'm tired of seeing my managers in this meeting. This is not useful to me. Let's get your team to start looking at this information. I want them to start running this meeting and be able to read these reports and dashboards and make the decisions that you're making right now. And so they did. And so what ended up happening is our performance had increased so much. We used to have, average of several days lead times for shipping. It's now cut down to hours.
Wow.
And our accuracy rate has increased a lot. Our errors went down from, a few percent down to now we're below 1%. I mean, just many things that happen, wonderful things that happen in your performance if you allow your people to think and you allow them to be empowered to make the decision. And I guess the way I look at my organization is I'm trying to let my frontline people manage the day-to-day, manage the current state, and my management team is trying to bring the department or the process or the company to a future state. And my job as a CEO is to consider the multiple futures for the company and set the overall direction. So once you do that, you free up a lot of bandwidth within your management team and within to be able to move the company forward.
So out of all these seven tenants, they obviously all have extreme value for the situation, or for the mindset, I should say. But if you were an everyday company in Tallahassee, what would be, do you think, your main advice to give a company to kind of move towards the exponential direction? What should they do first, do you think?
Well, first off, you gotta think big. And secondly, think about your future customer. What does your future customer want? What are they thinking? What are they like? Are your future customers who you're serving now? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not the same.
I would think that's a really hard thing for people to try to. It goes back to the trapeze, right? You have to be able to understand that those future customers will be there for you before you take a leap to jump in and service them. Like, let's take the Chamber of Commerce, for example. So, we've got 1,400 members. It's a pretty traditional kind of organization. I mean, every community in America has usually some form of a Chamber of Commerce, but people are changing. Mindsets are changing every day. I mean, the whole economy changes so rapidly now. And so one of the things that we see from, like, the national chamber organizations is trying to figure out what that future customer looks like. I mean, how do you encourage people to try to figure out what that customer looks like, I suppose?
Well, I'll take retail for example. There's so much destruction right now in retail, particularly from the brick and mortars. And I think that there's resentment between the channels, between brick and mortar and e-commerce. But then the pool of consumers, are they changing? Are the behaviors changing? What is it that they want? Do they really prefer to buy online? What is it about the experience that they're looking for? And it comes back down to, a lot of times it's generational. Some things are the millennials are driving at any time, any information, anywhere. Are you able to offer that experience in the store? Like, all the information that they could want at their fingertips instantly? What if they want to shop not during your store hours? Do they have the ability to do that and get the information? Maybe they still want to buy in your store, but because it's nighttime, they have no way. So, yeah, think about, well, we have this growing body of consumers that are increasingly preferring to buy this way. Are you prepared for that future? Do you even want that future? Like, what are you doing to bring yourself to address those needs?
You talk a lot about, you know, the community and trying to build the future in Tallahassee. What's sort of your vision for the future of Tallahassee, and maybe what's one that maybe we should all kind of try to figure out together?
My vision for the future of Tallahassee? I don't think we need to try to be like other communities. I think that we have some incredible existing assets here. I mean, we're a university town. We're also a government town. I think we should use those things to our advantage. Maybe we should have a booming education tech sector, a booming political tech sector, like really encourage industries around that. We have, I mean, you take Lester works for a company, Diverse Computing. They create software for law enforcement agencies. It's government tech.
Yeah.
And there are many tech companies like that in Tallahassee that caters to that here. And we should support that and encourage that, because that's already built into this community, right? Mm-hmm. That's an asset that's not everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, aside from that, the other thing I see, particularly in the business sector, which I think is a great quality, is I think we're more weighted towards small business here. What if we had a small business growth strategy instead of maybe some being enamored with other communities that try to follow these unicorns and trying to go for billion-dollar ideas, billion-dollar companies, billion-dollar industries, and placing those bets on that one? What if we place bets on 1,000 horses, which the horses are small businesses? It's more diverse. There are many more ideas out there. You can have growth at the same scale, albeit scattered across a lot of businesses instead of concentrated in just one. And I think we should embrace that quality in our community, because I think it just would be more interesting.
Sure. No, I mean, I think about companies like DiviUp, you know. I remember those guys selling socks at the downtown market on Saturdays, and obviously they've been involved and engaged over at Domi. I mean, you talked earlier about, you know, scalable personalization. I mean, that's exactly what those folks do. I mean, they're printing near, a million different pet faces on different socks and cranking them out one after the other. But, I mean, that's a high growth, impactful company that started, kind of in the quote unquote dorm room. Can you build systems that allow for more of those to emerge in your community? It seems like a pretty good model.
We think so. I think we are so blessed to be have three major institutions here. You got FSU, FAMU, and TCC that produce, a lot of great graduates. And with FSU and the Jim Moran School of Entrepreneurship, I mean, those guys out of DiviUp, they just came from a class in entrepreneurship. That was before the school was even created, and they were one of 30. Now that the School of Entrepreneurship has launched, and they're planning to come out with 700 students in that program, that's 20 times larger than when DiviUp started. Yeah. So imagine the need generated from all those graduates. Just a fraction of them stayed in Tallahassee and decided, hey, this is a great place to grow and start a business. Just imagine where we'll be 10 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, we should be able to luck our way into someone being pretty successful in that model, you would think, right? Is there anything, if a fellow chamber member were wanting to reach out to you later and say, hey, you know, I listened to the podcast. I thought the tenets of exponential mindset were great. Is there a single takeaway you wish that companies would maybe consider when they're going through planning for their future and trying to have a real vision for where they want to go?
I think the last tenet is useful, which is platform thinking and network effects. And maybe you might not apply that within your own business, but if you understand how it works, you can figure out how to differentiate your strategy to kind of coexist with it. And so the way to think about networks, so the tenet is you want to grow your network versus making your numbers. And the way you think about network effects, imagine in a linear system, you got a set of dominoes. You say you put 200 dominoes out in a line, and you set one in a motion, it goes da 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 da, and it goes at a set pace to like knock down all the dominoes in a line. Well, imagine a different system in an exponential kind of environment. Let's just say I have a box in front of me, and inside that box, I put mouse traps in there that are kind of put close together and armed with a ping pong ball in them. And I've got over 200 of them in there. And I drop one ping pong ball into that box, and suddenly it sets off 4, which sets off 16, which sets off 256. And it just like happens almost instantaneously. And that's like a chain reactor, and that's what network effects are. But network effects don't happen on its own. It requires the conditions to be right.
Somebody's got to set the traps.
Someone's got to set the traps. The traps have to be close together. We got to have a ping pong in there to set things in motion. And so what exponential companies do is try to take advantage of network effects. And one thing they want to do is to encourage many-to-many interactions and transactions versus single to many or single to single transactions. So in a traditional business environment, you make a sale between a seller and buyer. But let's just say in a platform, you have many to many. So they're unconstrained by physical things such as supply. So one really, really good example is Uber. So take, for instance, I want to start a taxi cab company in New York. I got $10 million. Well, I've got to buy 100 taxi cabs. I got to hire 100 drivers and the medallions to go with it. And soon I'm out of money. And that's as big as I can be. Well, Uber, they didn't seek to buy cars or hire people. They said, you know what? We're going to build a software platform that connects people who already own their cars with people who need rides. So they spend all they could spend the same $10 million on the software platform and seem to have unlimited growth because they don't have to keep buying cars and hiring people, which greatly limits your potential. So that would be an example where they encourage the many to many, like as many buyers as many drivers as possible to as many riders as possible. So that's a platform. Mm-hmm. And another example of that would be Amazon. So typical merchant, you know, I'm going to sell you some what I have and you're going to buy what I have. Well, they create a platform. So not only are they selling, but other people can sell on their site, including their competitors. Even Target sells things through Amazon. So trying to figure out, like, can I change my role to be a platform? And not everyone can be a platform, but understand if something's going to disrupt your business or your industry, it's probably going to be a company with a platform. So can you think in your business, can someone build a platform that can disrupt me? And if they do, how can I differentiate myself or my experience where I'm still relevant in that platform world? And so I think a platform, you just got to think about that. So
it's really interesting because that takes me back to a podcast we did a couple times ago when we interviewed Joe Manassa. And he used his example of how Zillow, which is an online platform for finding homes, seeing pictures inside, you can put in an offer on there, completely disrupted a couple years ago the real estate industry and how he's adapted since then. So it's really interesting to kind of hear you talk about that in a different way, because you realize really anything can be disrupted. Any business as we know it today could have something that throws a wrench in their plans happen tomorrow. So it's really just interesting to kind of hear some examples of stuff like that that have happened. Do you have any advice to businesses to kind of, you know, get a jump start on either, I don't know, like how can businesses prepare for that?
Well, I think you just think about, put on the customer cap and just say, if I were a customer and I was buying on this platform that's going to threaten me, like what is that experience like and what do they do really, really well? Well, I'm probably not going to be able to replicate that.
Sure.
So what can they not offer in that experience and go for that?
Mm-hmm.
And so many times, like lately I've been kind of traveling around to seeing some of my customers in the showrooms, and there was this insight. It's like, gosh, Amazon, you know, all these people are buying things on Amazon. Well, you can buy a light on Amazon, and I'm sure a lot of people do, but there is an experience to buying lighting. And one thing I like to equate is the wedding store experience.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. So very recently, my friend had invited me to a gown fitting, or not gown fitting, just go look at wedding dresses. And she had invited all her girlfriends, and we had a glass of champagne and over at Bosell's, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. And I can bet you, if you're going to plan a wedding, you're probably not going to buy your dress on Amazon. Why? Because you're building your fantasy, mm-hmm. your dream yeah. wedding. Your dream didn't include Amazon on your wedding day.
It included the glass of champagne with your friends.
You yeah. want to share that experience with your friends, right? Mm-hmm. And can you share an Amazon experience with your friends? Like, I mean, maybe no. on Facebook you could post something, but it's not the same, right?
Not special.
It's not special. Well, I also felt like you can create the same analogy in lighting stores. Like, what do we do as lighting designers, lighting consultants? We help people create their dream space in their home, whether it's their dream kitchen or their dream bathroom. And part of that is selecting that light. And what if you can recreate that wedding store experience where you're helping them build that fantasy? And suddenly, yes, aha, you're helping me make this fun, not like a chore or some mm-hmm. checklist for a project, but you're kind of actualizing that. And then once they do that, they're going to want to do every room Absolutely. In their house with you.
And that's how you do exponential growth.
Well, it's just a different way of approaching yeah. the experience. Yeah. I just don't think that that's something that these platforms can do a really good job of, is that personal, bringing that person back
right.
into the experience.
I think, you know, there's so much to take into this. You've brought some great examples to the table. And, you know, like we were saying earlier, this is one of those talks that, you know, I kind of heard people talking about in the bar later on at conference a couple of weeks ago, which is a great sign, because I think what we always look for is breakout sessions that allow people to get people thinking, right? Particularly in our you know, from our business background and the membership base that we have. Anytime we can put someone in a room, have someone like you get up and walk through some examples and some thoughts and some different concepts, and then have people walk out of the room and seeing them interact and talking amongst each other about what they just saw. That means we're doing our job right from a programming standpoint. And I can't thank you enough. We can't thank you enough for coming on the show, coming to conference and talking to us about this. I mean, I think this is something that anyone who owns a business, participates in the management of a business, or is a board member of an organization in town, you know, that is looking to figure out how to break through to that next level. These are mindsets that if you can apply them, can really, really impact your bottom line and, you know, how people experience and think of your company. We always talk a lot about how people think of companies and how people think of our community. And I think it helps to, first, like you said, think big about yourself before others are going to think big about what you're doing, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts, anything that we, you know, you want to maybe leave people with before we go, Imei? Again, you know, great to have someone like you who's running a company, helping run an important entrepreneurial organization, and then, again, going home at the dinner table with the kids and family and figuring out how to get people to think about Tallahassee in a better way. It's a good thing.
The only thing I could say is if you want to change what you do, you have to change how you think.
That's right. So people want to go learn a little bit more about Golden Lighting, send them to goldenlighting.com.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. And if you want to learn more about Domi Station, you can go to domistation.com. And folks, if you haven't heard, our friends at Domi have their first ever Domi Entrepreneurial Awards coming up in just a little bit here. The date is Thursday, September the 12th. What time does that kick off, Imei?
It starts, doors open at 5, and we've got kind of cocktail hour starting at 5:30.
Awesome. And the location is where?
It's over at the new Craft House at Railroad Square.
Awesome. So that's, yeah, folks, if you're listening there, that's the former Proof Brewery in Railroad Square. So good opportunity to get out and learn a little bit about some of the folks that are really driving Tallahassee's entrepreneurial community forward. Again, Imei, thanks for being with us. We appreciate
you
all you're doing
me.
For the community, and appreciate you spending your time with us today. And we look forward to seeing some big growth happening in your company and happening here in our community. So, folks, thanks as always for tuning in and listening. We appreciate you. We thank you for being a member and a supporter of the Chamber of Commerce. And as always, if you want to tune into what we've got going on our calendar and beyond, you can visit our website at www.talchamber.com. That's talchamber.com, where you can find everything you need to know about what's going on in the business community here in Tallahassee, Florida. Thanks as always for listening. We'll see you again real soon. Take care.